This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Lynn Mark, and you're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Joining us today is Sonia Randhawa, Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Welcome to the show, Sonia.
Good morning.
So there's been a lot of discussion surrounding the formation of a Malaysian Media Council, or an MMC, but let's just take a step back to say, what would self-regulation entail?
Self-regulation, the basic concept of self-regulation is that in order for the media to have credibility and buy-in from the public, they need to be able to, first of all, abide by a code of ethics, but just as importantly, they need to be seen to be abiding by a code of ethics. And so a self-regulatory body is a body which sort of acts as the interface between the media and the public, whether it's the people who are listening to a radio show, the people who are reading a newspaper, the people who are looking at a website, news website in particular. It makes the media accountable to them primarily, rather than, as is the case at the moment, primarily accountable to the government. So when you ask the question, who watches the media? The answer is the Media Council on behalf of the public.
Right. But do you think that we as a society are mature enough, like our media landscape is mature enough to self-regulate in this manner?
I have a real problem with this idea that we have to attain some mythical level of maturity before we can have the full enjoyment of our fundamental human rights. You don't get to be a fully functioning human being by reaching some sort of like age of maturity as a nation. What you find is it's through having debates, discussions, and addressing the nitty-gritty problems of the implementation of human rights that we actually manage to develop an organic regulatory system, organic norms for society. So if we don't have these things, we're never, ever going to reach that, as I say, mythical level of maturity where we get them. We are a country that is, by the standards of our neighbours, by the standards of our past, doing well economically. We're a country which is well educated. We are a country which doesn't have any, at the moment, pressing issues of violence and insecurity within our borders. When will we be mature enough? When will the conditions be perfect for us to enjoy our fundamental liberties? I'd like to suggest that if it's not now, it's probably never going to happen.
Right. So you mentioned we are doing fairly well in comparison to our neighbours. But I understand that Malaysia is one of the last countries in the region to have something like the Malaysian Media Council. Could you tell us a bit about that, maybe? What are we seeing from our neighbours?
That's a bit of an exaggeration, but we certainly, Indonesia has got a really well-functioning press council. It doesn't cover all media. It's largely confined to the press, certainly in terms of membership. But it's been very successful in setting norms for the industry, and also in ensuring that the public feel satisfied that their complaints are being taken seriously. The Philippines has really good regional media councils. The national level one isn't really functioning very well. Unfortunately, Thailand and Singapore, we aren't seeing very much in the way of developments there. And Thailand's more going backwards, unfortunately. But certainly looking to Indonesia as a shining beacon for these things in the region, we can certainly see that their press council functions as a self-regulatory body that upholds the standards of ethical reporting and media freedom for the press. It also pushes the envelope in ways. For example, one of the issues that are faced by journalists in Indonesia are the concerns from extremist and minority groups over reporting of things, particularly those who are prone to violence. Right. So instead of going through legal means, there's often the direct route of violence. And what has happened in some of these cases is that the police will target the media outlet as much as they target the people who are engaging in acts of aggression against the media outlet. So the Media Council has actually played an important role in helping to educate the police that when people either take action against the media directly, or even if they lodge complaints with the police, about the media, that the police's role is to uphold the standards of freedom of expression. And so they go through the media council first, rather than immediately taking action against the media outlet. And that's a really important step, that because of the way it's been drafted and set up, is able to take that sort of proactive community engagement, in this case with the police, to help to smooth over those relationships and ensure that both the police understand where the media are coming from and the media understand where the police are coming from, and they can both try and work together in the interests of the broader public.
Right. I'm actually curious as to how Indonesia's press council manages the size of its industry, because Indonesia, of course, is an extremely large country. How does the press council then navigate just simply the volume of reports and of media outlets they must manage in every day?
Well, the press council consists of only 9 elected members, and they are 3 members from media organizations, 3 members who are representing journalist organizations, and 3 members of the public. And these are people who, so the process is that there is an election held by the organizations and groups that are members of the Media Council. So you've got a 2 sort of level of membership. There's the board of the council, and that's the 9 people. And then you've got the broader lower level tier, which is all the newspapers and the journalist associations who make up the broad membership of the Media Council. And they elect the 3 members of the public who sit on the press council. Now, they don't get paid. And if you think about, as you say, the size of Indonesia, not just in terms of the number of people, but also the geography of Indonesia, the cultural differences from one end to the other, the linguistic differences throughout the archipelago, it's a huge job. So what they do is they have a secretariat, and the secretariat helps to filter out the more frivolous complaints and see which ones need to go up to the council itself. The volume of complaints is huge. They get thousands of complaints. They are over 4,000 media outlets, if I'm not mistaken, that we're talking about. So, I mean, if you compare that to Malaysia, we've got peanuts in comparison in terms of the number of outlets, in terms of the diversity as well. So I think that the way that it's handled in Indonesia is, there's one thing is that people are very confident in the process and confident in the adjudication that's being done by the press council the day one person's there. The second thing is the secretariat plays an important role in helping to funnel the complaints and make sure that they're sort of... So if you've got, like, let's say there's 300 complaints about one particular media outlet, it only requires 1 adjudication. It doesn't require 300 separate adjudications. So you need to be able to sort of lump all those together and to set the standards. The other side of it is the level of reoffending. People aren't reoffending, so they're not committing the same types of offences over and over again, which means that the press is generally getting better. And you see this in South Africa as well, but the level of reoffence is very low. And I think that that's partly linked to the public confidence in the institution. If the people feel that the press council, the media council, is reflecting their interests in the ethical media as well as the media's interests, then it's not really a stick, but a huge carrot for media players to be seen to be abiding by and doing as much as they can to abide by the council's decisions, because then they are seen as being trustworthy and ethical. And it gives them that edge over particularly the online competition that doesn't necessarily have the same strict standards.
Right. Now, we're speaking to Sonia Randhawa, Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Stay tuned to The Morning Run at BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that goes behind the headlines where we speak to members of the press on their stories. So today we're speaking to Sonia Randhawa, Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Now, Sonia, there has been some talk that there is a need to repeal the Printing Presses and Publications Act first before a Malaysian Media Council can be set up. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
I think that is a must. Mm-hmm. So, as I've been saying, that any self-regulatory body, the aim of it is to make the media accountable primarily to the public rather than to, for instance, the government. And when you've got, and it's the main document to ensure this and that sets the standards is the Code of Ethics. Now, under the regime set up under the Printing Presses and Publications Act, the newspapers in particular have to be worried about their license. Mm-hmm. And the decision to maintain or amend or repeal a license is in the hands of the government. Now, even when the courts make decisions and things like that, as we've seen in previous cases, the newspaper cannot circulate until those judgments have been made. And that's a huge financial burden. And so while journalists and editors do a fantastic job of trying to represent the public interest, mm-hmm. Despite the PPPA being there, in the last instance, the newspaper has to take into account the government's perspective above all others, because their bread and butter relies on maintaining that license. And no matter what the government says, that's still there. So they can say, oh, we won't do anything, we believe in freedom of expression. But as long as the Printing Presses and Publications Act is still there, it's a no-brainer. You can't put the livelihoods of your staff at such great risk by taking particularly the investigative journalism, really daring journalism that pushes the boundaries of discussion and debate where the government is feeling uncomfortable. And I think that we need that to some extent. And I'm not saying that we need media that's inciting, but that's having those really difficult conversations and having those debates, which, as I say, aren't necessarily going to make the government comfortable. And for that, we need the Printing Presses and Publications Act to be repealed. I should also say that this is, in many ways, it's a no-brainer. There isn't any need for the Printing Presses and Publications Act. Reading is not something like radio. You can have it on and you can listen to it and not be really doing a huge amount of work. Sorry, listeners. For newspapers, it's work. You have to sit down. You have to open it up. You have to make a conscious decision to read something. Okay. So when you're, what I can do is, if I'm getting offended by what I'm reading, I have a number of options. I can stop reading the newspaper. I can put it down mm-hmm. and cease to read it. I can then file a complaint with the paper itself. I can talk to my friends and persuade them not to file. I can set up a campaign to say, this newspaper is engaging in hateful language and hateful speech, and we don't want to buy it. And we think you advertisers should pull your products from us as well. There's a whole range of things. But fundamentally, reading a newspaper requires work. Reading a book requires work, which is why so few jurisdictions actually have this sort of regulation of newspapers, particularly in this day and age, right. where the internet offers so many more options for readers.
Right. Now, the measures that you mentioned, so filing a complaint with the newspaper, starting a campaign, those are primarily consumer-driven. Would a media council like the MMC have the ability to take punitive measures then in the absence of legislation or a government control like as such enshrined in the PPPA?
So those things that I was talking about just now, those are things that they could do today, even without a media council. What the media council does is that it doesn't need to have legislative powers, and a lot of media councils don't. What the media council has behind it is the force of public opinion and also a moral authority. Those are the two things that give it weight. And that's really important in today's media landscape, because as any journalist is aware, and as any consumer of media is aware, there is a lot of rubbish out there. There is disinformation, there's misinformation. There are media outlets that are not going to want to be seen to be upholding standards of journalism and to be upholding ethical standards, because that's not their job. Their job is to outrage and their job is to inflame. And there's a huge number of those out there. So what the Media Council does is it draws that line. if you are a part of the Media Council, you can get like a kite mark. That's one of the things that's being discussed that says we stick by our stories. We uphold the truth in as far as we can. We abide by the ethical standards of journalism in Malaysia. We give our readers, our listeners, we give them the right of reply, those who are affected by our stories, and we strive to do our best by the general public. And as I say, it's not like it isn't effective. And it's effective in countries where they have a lot of really difficult and ingrained issues, like South Africa, like Indonesia. In comparison to them, Malaysia is a much easier country to be a journalist in, I suspect. The second thing is that there is a place for legislative recognition of a media council, even if it's not set up by legislation. And CIJ has been quite sceptical of previous models where it's been set up by legislation, because they've often made the media council subservient to the government in one way or another. Mm. We need to have a really independent media council, especially given our history of government interference in the media. Recognition of the Media Council can play an important role is in defamation proceedings.
Right.
So in Ireland, for example, the Media Council is actually set up, it's recognised in the Defamation Act, which also sets up how it is constituted. And what happens there is, if you are a member of the Media Council and you have a track record of upholding the decisions made by the Media Council, which indicates a commitment to ethical practice and to good standards of journalism, that can be taken into account during defamation proceedings. So you can make a submission saying we do our best to uphold ethical standards of journalism, and you can tell this by our track record in the media with media council rulings. So it's not that you have to have a perfect record, but that you are doing your best to uphold standards, and that should be taken into account when you make a plea for good standing.
Right. And Sonia, just very quickly before we end, you were part of initial discussions with the Council of Eminent Persons on the formation of the MMC. But I understand that the demographic of the industry that was invited was not necessarily complete. What were your observations from that?
We made a submission to the Council of Eminent Persons. Mm. I wasn't part of discussions with them.
Okay.
So I'm not sure who was. And this is one of the problems with that process, is we're not sure who has made submission and who hasn't. We have been part of a process of consultation where we have been trying to put together a process of consulting with as wide a segment of both the media and of civil society as we could engage with on the formation of a media council. Now, we've done this partly as a response to some suggestions that we've heard that have been made that would, for example, lock out the public from a media council, which I think would be a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at what has happened elsewhere, without public representation, the Media Council often becomes just a rubber stamp for the industry. And then it doesn't command public confidence, and it doesn't actually serve the function that it's supposed to have. And that's when you get those calls for legislation and to have judicial measures that the Media Council can take. The consultation that we ran earlier in March, there were journalists there, and they from that formed the Journalist Alliance. But I need to stress that any process that happens needs to have the involvement of journalists, the involvement of editors and publishers, and the involvement of the public as well. Because without all three sectors being represented, it won't be balanced. What it doesn't need, I would hasten to add, is we don't need to have government dictating, because that's going to weaken it. And also, the role of owners has to be viewed with circumspection, shall we say, because owners, as we can see in various parts of the world, are not forces for media freedom. They're often the people against whom journalists have to struggle to ensure that the newsroom remains independent. So I think we need to be very wary, particularly given the political nature of a lot of media ownership in Malaysia, when we talk about owners being involved in the process.
Okay, and we've been speaking to Sonia Randhawa, Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Thank you so much for joining us, Sonia. That's all we have on Pressing Matters on the Morning Run today. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.